This is the Anderson Files on Podclips. The Anderson Files is a look at commerce, investment, economics, and retirement issues that affect each and every one of you. Your host is Mike Anderson, Executive Vice President and Registered Investment Advisor of the Warner Companies, a Foundation Risk Partners Warburg Pincus company. The Warner Companies is a registered investment advisor with securities offered through M Holdings Security Incorporated, member of FINRA and SIPC. And now your host, friend and colleague, Mike Anderson.
Secure Act 2.0, a huge federal law affecting the retirement of tens of millions of Americans. I'm talking today with Meredith Sesser. Meredith is among the nation's leading authorities on employee benefits law, ERISA, and benefits taxation. With 18 years of pension and ERISA experience, she is routinely assisting businesses and nonprofit organizations in the preparation, implementation, operation, and termination of retirement plans. Meredith, welcome.
Thank you, Mike, for having me this morning.
It's great. Yeah, I should say welcome back. It's been a while since you've been on the show.
It has been a while, but with this new Secure 2.0, there's a lot of changes in my industry right now. So a good time to come back to discuss it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to start out, what is Secure 2.0 and when did it become effective?
The Secure 2.0, given by the Title II, follows Secure number one, which was passed in December 19. And Secure is really an acronym for Setting Every Community Up for Retirement Enhancement Act of 2019. That was the initial one. And 2.0 was signed by President Biden December 29th, 22. And it's part of the Consolidated Appropriations Act. I recall in December, as you know, the 29th is really close to the end of the year, and the government likes to sign things by the end of the year. We didn't think it would get through, but it did get passed, and it came to us at the end of the year, the 29th, with certain effective dates, January 1 of 23. So not a lot of time to prepare during the holidays. But the purpose of the act, this number two, which follows number one, is really to get people to save more for their retirement. You know, they find that 32% of working age Americans have no retirement savings at all. And if you look at workers that are young adults in their 20s, they have zero savings. Nearly half of them have zero savings. So it's about 58 million people with no retirement money out there. And the purpose of this act is really to get people to put money in retirement plans and defer it for later when they do retire. So that's the goal of this act. And also in this act, they tried to expand the access to retirement plans because not all workers have access to put money into a retirement plan. And the third thing the act tried to do is really ease the administration for the employers and lower the cost of setting these plans up. Because as an employer, there's a lot of complicated rules that go along with Secure 2.0 and any ERISA retirement plan. And the purpose of the act was to simplify it, get more plans set up, get more people contributing. Now, in terms of effective dates, as I said, it went into effect or was signed on December 29th, 22. Some provisions are effective January 1, 23. So they're already effective this year. And there's others that don't go into effect until 24, 25, and even later. So it's a staggered effective period. And there's 92 provisions in the act that relate directly to retirement plans. So you can imagine it's a lot of material, a lot of different effective dates, and a lot to, you know, understand for everybody in the industry.
How your take as a pension attorney, ERISA attorney, do you think this is a nice, effective, solid leap forward on what its goal is? Do you think it's going to accomplish this next leg of more accessibility, more encouragement, more streamlined
I do. I think
streamlining
some of the
for employers
are revenue raising. You can see that the government is trying to raise revenue and tax people on retirement benefits sooner. And we see that with some of the Roth provisions. And then some of it is trying to have access for more employees so they can participate. The rules are complicated. We're still waiting for instructions and guidance from the IRS, which hasn't come out yet, to explain how to implement some of the provisions. But I think all in all, it's taking into account that people are living longer, working longer, and need more money to retire on and need more money to save. So I think that's the goal, and I think we'll see more people participating. Some of it through forced automatic enrollment, which I'll discuss. And also we'll see the government raising revenue as well.
And getting into some of the specific features of Secure Act 2.0, what does the law do to required minimum distributions for older employees?
So a required minimum distribution is when somebody initially turned 70 and a half, they had to start drawing on the retirement money in their account. So retirement plans, for the most part, are tax-deferred money. And when you hit the 70 and a half, you had to start drawing out a piece of it and paying tax on it. Again, revenue raising for the government. With Secure 1.0, they changed that 70 and a half to 72. And with Secure 2.0, they increased it even further to 73. So that means that you can delay having to pull on your retirement and pay income tax. But again, once it starts coming out, that it's taxable and money for the government. I think they did this because people are working longer and living longer. But basically, if your first minimum distribution would be due by April 1st of the year you turn 73, and then December 31st for each year following. And then there's another provision that in 2033, so 10 years from now, Secure pushes the age to 75. So if you were already taking minimum distributions, this doesn't impact you. It really impacts people who were not at that age yet, and it delays having to take the distribution. So RMD age increased to 73 for those who turned 72 after 12/31/22. And it increases to 75 for those who turn 74 after December 31st, 2032. So it's complicated for people to understand. I got a lot of calls on people who were already taking minimums asking if they can stop. And no, you can't stop. This is more prospective to people who hadn't begun yet. So that was one of the welcome changes of that delay by, you know, a few years.
You're listening to The Anderson Files, and my guest today is Meredith Sesser, ERISA attorney. Meredith, to continue, what provisions impact, if any, employer matching contributions?
With regards to the match, one of the things that you could do now is you can match in Roth money. So in the past, it was always pre-tax money. And now with this new provision, you can, but are not required to match with Roth money. So that means after tax money going into your account and growing tax free. So this was a welcome change for people that are younger, trying to increase their tax deferred money or, you know, retirement account. And so now if the employer wants to, they can match Roth. Now, we are waiting for guidance on this because there will be an amendment required, and we don't know how to actually implement this, and we don't know how many people are going to actually do this because administratively it might be difficult running through payroll. But it is something new that they offered. So it's a welcome change to those younger employees that want their match in Roth rather than pre-tax.
For the government to produce guidance on how to apply the law for Secure Act 2.0, getting clarification, what kind of time lag would we expect? Is this something that will be published for the industry to apply, you know, in the balance of this year? or later?
That's a very good question. And I've talked to people in the government who actually write the legislation. They're planning on coming out with something this summer. And they said it will just be some sort of guidance, but we don't really know what to expect. And then they said they'll be coming out with something over the next 2 years, which will be further guidance to employers. So it's not very helpful when you get this legislation and you don't really know how to implement it. You're really just kind of doing the best you can type of a thing and hope that the IRS accepts it. But typically, you try to read the legislation and implement what it says. And if the IRS were to perform an audit on a plan, hope that they agree with the way you implemented it. Another factor into implementation of these provisions are the plan documents, which are generally provided by a document provider, and they need to write the amendments and the documentation to implement all of this, and that takes the time on their part as well. So they're waiting for the guidance, and if they don't get it within a certain period of time, they just have to write the legislation, the amendments, what they think it is, and go with it. So we hope that we'll get guidance this summer and that it will help us put this into our plan documents. But we just don't know yet. That's the hope.
Yeah, the hope and the prayer, exactly. What changes were made, if any, in regards to catch-up contributions for employees who are age 50 or older? Were they affected?
No. Let me tell you what, so a catch-up contributions, those came around in 2001. And basically, the IRS is trying to help people that are 50 and older put in a little bit extra to retirement. And it was scheduled to expire in 2010. But luckily, Congress made that permanent in 2006. So catch-ups were extra contributions for people over 50. And there were several provisions in this act dealing with catch-up contributions. The first one was catch-ups were typically done in 401k plans, and now they're allowing it in an IRA. So they're allowing a catch-up to an IRA of $1,000, beginning in 24, it's going to be indexed annually. So that was a welcome change because you couldn't do catch-ups before, and now we have it was just limited to 1,000 before, and now in 04 it's going to go up. So that was a nice change. Now, there's also a provision on catch-ups having to be made in Roth money rather than pre-tax money for certain employees who are making a lot of money or what the IRS thinks is a lot of money. So basically, if you're an employee and you have compensation greater than $145,000 annually, which will be indexed, then your catch-up to the plan has to be after-tax Roth. You can no longer make a catch-up pre-tax. And to me, this is a revenue raiser for the government because high earners are now having to make their catch-ups after-tax and pay money to the government on that Roth. So that was a change. I don't know. It is required. It's mandatory for 24, which means that we need an amendment, which we don't have provided yet, but by 24 it's going to have to be amended, and that all catch up for those wage earners will have to be Roth. And then another thing that they did was for people age 60 to 63. So we have catch up for age 50, and then those that are 60 to 63 get a different kind of a catch up that's in addition to the regular catch up. It's called a special catch up, and it's limited to $10,000. Or 150% of the regular catch-up. And this is mandatory and requires an amendment. So for 23, for example, the catch-up is $7,500. And if we took 150% of that, that's $11,250. So you would be limited to $10,000, the lesser of. So that's the greater of the two. So that's where we are right now with the extra catch-up. Again, we need an amendment for that. And then we do need legislation on catch-up in general because when they wrote this whole SECURE Act, they accidentally eliminated catch-ups altogether. They inadvertently repealed all catch-ups. And that I don't think was intentional. So Congress has to go back and add that and reinstate catch-up provisions. So we're waiting for that, and they haven't given us a time frame on that. So that was clearly a provision that got taken out by mistake in this huge bill. So catch-ups have a lot of changes, and I think practitioners are going to have to really pay attention to these new rules and how to implement them.
I'm speaking with Meredith Sesser, ERISA attorney, and we're discussing and going back and forth regarding Secure Act 2.0, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io.
The Anderson Files is a proud advocate for the Small Business Council of America. For decades, the SBCA has been the voice for U.S. small business on the Hill and to the administration, successfully pursuing favorable tax, benefits, and estate legislation. To learn more and to become a member or sponsor, go to www.sbca.net.
Meredith, to continue on the reinstating the catch-up, that didn't get caught and it wasn't included in Secure Act 2.0, so there's going to have to be something separate just for that to reinstate it?
That's right. Yes, unfortunately, it got inadvertently taken out. You know, everyone in our industry actually reads through the bill and the legislation and noticed that it got removed by accident. And clearly that wasn't the intent, since there's so many new catch-up provisions that the idea wasn't to get rid of catch-up altogether. The idea is to get people to save and save more. And so clearly they'll have to add it back in, but they haven't said when. They like to add things in at the end of the year, like December 30th. So we'll see. Maybe at the end of this year, they'll add it back in.
Right. And for new plans, for new 401k plans, are there new requirements to comply with under the act?
Yeah, this was a very interesting provision, and I think kind of scaring people to adopt plans now before 25. Basically, in 2025, Secure Act requires companies setting up a new 401k plan to require automatic enrollment. So automatic enrollment is when employees don't initiate participating in the 401k plan, the employer automatically withholds from their payroll and deposits that into the plan. And so with this new legislation in 25, if you set up a new 401k plan, you're required to automatically enroll your employees and withhold 3% of their wages to go into the plan. You can do more than that, but not more than 10%. And then the rate increases by 1% each year up to 15%. So this doesn't impact old 401k plans, but it is required for new ones. There is an exemption for certain companies. Small companies with 10 or fewer employees don't have to do this auto-enroll. New companies that are around for less than 3 years don't have to do it. But basically, if you're going to set up a 401k in 25 on, you're likely going to have automatic enrollment. So I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just it is the way it is. I find that people who do auto enrollment, employees who have money put in, generally leave it in and don't take it back out. So that's a way to get people to save for retirement. Another thing that they allowed for under the legislation was to encourage people to participate. You can offer them a small financial incentive, which could be like a gift card. So you can say to employees, if you go and participate, we're going to give you a Starbucks gift card. So that's a way also to encourage people to stay in the plan or to enroll in the plan. So just an interesting provision they put in, and we'll see how it goes. I personally see room for error because I see in auto-enroll plans a lot of times the employers fail to auto-enroll their employees. So we'll see what happens when in 25.
Right. And other situations that I've seen arise out of auto-enrollment is that it, where it gets a little messy, where someone leaves the company, they came in under auto enrollment, they leave the company, and then they're rehired at some later point and getting them reactivated properly. Or as you said, where employer doesn't auto enroll them to begin with. You got to be careful with it, as we know.
Room for error. Sure. Definitely room for errors.
Exactly. To go on, what changes were made with regard to Roth? Were there any?
Yeah, so like as we discussed, Roth is money that goes in after tax. And I think a lot of younger people who are saving tend to do Roth contributions. And one of the things that was interesting with Roth that never really made sense was if you had a Roth 401k, if you hit retirement age, you know, 72 or 73, whatever the RMD age was, you had to take minimum distributions from Roth accounts in a 401k. But if you had a Roth IRA, you didn't have to take distributions. So they weren't really on a level playing field. So what we saw was that people were taking their Roth 401k money when they hit 72 and rolling it to a Roth IRA to avoid having to make minimum distributions. So it seemed kind of silly that it applied to one but not the other. And now with Secure, they leveled the playing field and Roth 401k plans are exempt from RMDs starting in 24. So that now will avoid people having to roll their Roth 401k to a Roth IRA because they won't have to take any distributions from that account. So that was a welcome change, something that I think should have been there to begin with. The other thing is some people have what we call simple IRAs and SEP IRAs. Those now will offer a Roth option, whereas before they were only pre-tax. So starting in 23, they can be Roth simple IRAs and Roth SEP IRAs. Again, it needs a new plan document. I personally haven't seen any Roth simple IRAs yet. So those will have to be written and we don't know when people will have those available, but that is an option now.
And in addition, another provision, were there any changes made for missed required minimum distributions? I know in the past, missing those RMDs could be quite egregious in terms of penalty.
Oh, yes. It was in the past, if you forgot to take your minimum distribution, there was a 50% tax on the amount you missed. So if you missed a $50,000 minimum, it was a 50% tax on that. So they did lower it to 25%, which is a big decrease in the penalty. And then they said, if you timely fix the mistake, they'll lower it to 10%. And timely means by the end of the second year after it was missed. So if you catch these things quick enough, the penalty is lower. Now, historically, we haven't seen the penalty being assessed very often. And practitioners are worried that now that it's only 10%, possibly, that it will be assessed. So there is still a chance to apply for reasonable cause and have it all waived. But this was definitely a welcome change, because a lot of people don't have advisors telling them to take the minimum distribution, or from a plan, they just forget to distribute it. So this was a, you know, stiff penalty for a small failure that's now been reduced. So very welcome change.
What are the new rules for assessing retirement funds during time of need? If there's an emergency, something unexpected?
So the Act, Secure 2.0 put in a few provisions to try to tell people that if you do put money in to save for retirement, that there are options on getting it out if you need it. And a lot of this is what we call self-certification, meaning the employer doesn't have to decide whether the employee is impacted. The employee has to actually keep records that they can apply for this. So one is that you can access up to $1,000 a year from your retirement plan for emergency personal or family expenses without having to pay a 10% early withdrawal penalty. And that starts January 1, 24. So it's really for unforeseen or immediate financial needs. So you can take it out, but it does have to go back. And if it doesn't go back, then you can't do it again for 3 years. So you would pay income tax on it, but you can't have another emergency distribution for 3 years. But if you do pay it back, you could technically withdraw $1,000 every year for an emergency should you need it. Another one they did was domestic abuse. For survivors of domestic abuse, they can withdraw the lesser of $10,000 or 50% of their account without penalty, starting in January 1, 2024. And again, they have to self-certify for their records that they're a victim or a survivor of domestic abuse. It's not for the employer to determine that. And the last one's a natural disaster. There's a distribution for federally declared disasters victims or people impacted to take up to $22,000 without penalty. And then it's treated as gross income over 3 years without penalty. So they really did put in provisions to try to help people withdraw from their retirement when needed, which I think is a welcome provision.
Got it. And as we wrap up, are there any other more high profile or relevant plan enhancements that were made by Secure Act 2.0? I know there's many minor ones, but maybe one or two more.
One of them is that if an employee is repaying their student loans and can't afford to put money into a retirement plan, they don't get a match if they're not making a deferral. So there's a provision where an employer can match a loan repayment. So if I pay my student loan at $1,000 a month, the employer can treat that $1,000 as if it was a deferral and match that into the 401k. So it's optional, but it allows people repaying student loans the ability to get a match without making a deferral. So that was an interesting one. And I think the other one was with sole proprietors, they now can adopt a 401k up until their April 15th. So if they're a calendar year sole proprietor, which means one person company, they can still adopt a 401k up to April 15th and put in deferrals, which is something we've never had before. So it's just another planning opportunity for sole proprietors to be able to set up that type of a plan later after the close of the year.
Meredith, thank you so much for guesting today. And what's the best way to reach you?
Oh, well, you can reach me and go through my website, which is sessorlaw.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions on Secure Act or anything else related to ERISA and retirement plans.
Meredith, thank you so much. And when we see Secure Act 3.0, we'll definitely have you back.
All right. Thanks for talking to me today.
Thanks, Meredith. Thank you, Daryl Wayne, engineer, Mark Allen, producer. I'm Mike Anderson, and this is the Anderson Files on podclips.io. Keep calm and keep listening.
You've been listening to the Anderson Files with Mike Anderson. Visit us at podclips.io and check on the financial channel for more episodes and information on the Anderson Files.